This is what should be done by one who is feeling goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing, like the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise anything in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother
protects
with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Should be a few times. Yes, right. So it's going up and down.
Yep.
Can you measure? Can you tell?
Okay. So when you look at, say, your personal experience with the meditation practice, what are you actually aiming for? Say, you know, many of you are Dharma practitioners, but quite a few of you like to meditate on a regular basis. So what is the actual purpose of what you are doing? So usually, like in a nutshell, most people want sort of some peace, stability of mind. Many people are interested in, say, wisdom and insight, you know, because when you look at your say, you know, experience as a human being in modern society, and just the amount of, say, information and knowledge which is available on, say, radio, telly, and the internet, that people can get a sense for, say, like the limitations of worldly knowledge, and they may be interested in something which is a bit more deeper, more profound than that. And naturally, people have they have past life parami as well, so they have a set, like an underlying sense for, say, like spirituality, for practice, for religious and spiritual practice, you know, which can easily go over say several lifetimes. So, you know, you come to the current life, and you know, you feel that you may be aiming for something deeper, more profound, in your human experience, because, you know, especially these days, life can be quite fast and, you know, can be quite, I wouldn't say superficial, but just, there's a lot of emphasis on making money, and you know, people's having, you know, they've got loans, they've got to put their kids through uni, so there's this kind of economic pressure on people, and they may be interested in something which is a bit more profound, a bit more more deep and, say, meaningful, not just busting their chops trying to make enough money to live. And so, but that whole business with meditation practice, where you can develop some very deep, tangible insight, which you really can't get from any other other process, other, say, the mindfulness training, where, you know, you calm and stabilize the mind, and you develop that kind of awareness, that sensory, increased sensory awareness, which makes you more aware of oneself as one's personal makeup as a human being, your thoughts, your feelings, you know, your views and perceptions. And so, but all this, you know, as one develops one's meditation, one gets the benefits, the peace, the sharpness, the clarity, even things like protection against, say, like even dementia, as one moves into middle age, old age, where one's memory starts to get affected or starts to fade, that with regular meditation you can slow that process down, you know, with a little meditation every day. And but, you know, maintain some sharpness of your faculties, an increase in sensory awareness. So so, you know, with the practice, as you develop the meditation, you move into your personality, you know, you start to see what actually makes you up, you know, your all your preferences, your likes and dislikes, all your strengths and weaknesses, and all the things, you know, which you know, the things that people do which might affect you or push your buttons or possibly even shake you up under extreme situations. But most people, their meditation experience tends to be more favorable. They tend to get more benefit than not from meditation practice, because even though it's quite simple in its mechanics, that it does go, you know, over time more deeply into one's personality, and it goes right through you. So the effects of meditation go right through your personality. Say, especially if you've been practicing for years, easily at the surface to intermediate level. So people become more balanced, more well-rounded, more kind, compassionate, more, you know, more intuitive, you know, insightful. They have a better understanding of, say, like human beings, and you know, even things like even their pets. You know, their cats and dogs, and if you say like living on a farm, you know, it can increase your understanding of like our animal friends, the way, you know, the things they do, the way they tick. So, you know, you get this kind of intuitive feeling even for the animal realm. So over time, you know, so we see these benefits of the meditation practice, which become more refined and more deep as the years go by, over 5 years, 10 years, and essentially, you know, it makes you a better person, a better human being. And, you know, you can spot it quite quickly. You know, if you meet someone on the street, and, you know, and you have a chit chat, and easily within 5 minutes, you know, you can get a sense that person is a practitioner or they're a meditator, because they have characteristics that you don't see in other people. You know, mainstream, say mainstream people can be quite, you know, the vast majority of the human population are good people, but when you have people who are actually practicing, you know, you can see the difference between them and mainstream human beings. You know, because the effects on the personality can be quite refined in a sense. They have characteristics that you just don't get from bopping around in everyday life. So, where's this all taking? So it's all, you know, all very nice to get calm and peaceful and to develop myself as a human being, one's personality, one's personal characteristics. But, you know, what are we aiming for? The goal of this, at the end of this, say, this path, and the vast majority of us are, you know, even though lay life has a lot of responsibilities and duties, and the vast majority of you are working for a living, that, you know, we're aiming for, on an ultimate level, we're aiming for, you know, the realization of Dhamma, you know, the realization of the enlightenment stages. I mean, why else would you, you know, I mean, ultimately, why else would you practice every day, keep precepts, developing one's insight, one's wisdom? You know, you're doing this for a higher purpose, and that higher purpose is for the realization of the ultimate nature of the human mind, one's physical body, and the nature of the cosmos and the universe in its totality. So, you know, in a nutshell, the realization of the human condition, the human experience on this planet, in this cosmos. That's the ultimate purpose, or the high purpose of this practice, over, you know, like say several lifetimes, because that's what it's going to take. But, you know, essentially, every day that you practice, you can't lose. You know, it's all another drop in the bucket, and it will take you to the ultimate goal in time. So with the meditation practice, there's two ways we can do this. We'll focus on the feelings around the mouth, because it's a very sharp, comfortable practice, which is very, very distinct. You can either do focus on the feelings around the mouth with the breath on the periphery. You can just do that silently, or you can do one of these supporting mantras, which will essentially help to calm the mind. So we use the Anicca principle, which is a user-friendly principle, and you can choose anything whatsoever within, say, the mind experience, or anything in nature. It could be flowers, could be trees, it could be things like thoughts, feelings, consciousness, perception, whatever area of human experience or science or the external world which is important to you. It could be things like any aspect of biology, any aspect of nature, natural conditions. And that particular thing or object is changeable, or changeable in nature. So as you're breathing out, focusing on the mouth, as you're breathing out, you can do this as a secondary support. It could be, say, like feelings. As you're breathing out, feelings. Breathing in, breathing out are changeable. Breathing in, breathing out in nature. So feelings are changeable in nature, or feelings are changeable. You choose the short or long mantra with the Anapanasati, the breath meditation, and you'll find that you will calm down faster with that. I've done this for quite some time now, and it works quite well. But now I'm onto something else which works even better. But that one's user friendly, and you'll find that it will work quite well for you. So you can experiment. You can do it in the beginning. And if it's not suitable for you, then you can just watch the sensation of breathing at that point. So get yourself in a comfortable position with your back straight and head upright and comfortable. Make sure you can breathe fully into the chest. Make sure there's nothing tight around the waist, the throat. And just with the, so just maybe for the first 5 minutes, use a mantra, use a mantra of changeability, of any kind of phenomena. Could be feelings, thoughts, ideas, and then just do that for 5 minutes. Just, you know, just to experiment with it, and then if you don't particularly like it, then just go to the experience of breathing as silently as you possibly can for the next 30 minutes in total. you feel a little bit sleepy or tired, just take slow, deep breaths and maximize one's alertness. you find your mind wanders away from the meditation object, just gently bring your attention back to the breathing cycle just at this point in the meditation. Find the breathing a little bit difficult to follow, just breathe a little bit more forcefully, more quickly, and increase the strength of the sensations with the breathing cycle. find that you're still thinking excessively, just try to understand those thoughts and feelings, because the more you understand them, the greater the mind relaxes and lets go of this phenomena. We're coming up towards the end of the meditation, so just reflect back, see if you can see any change in the state of the mind. And I'll ring the gong 3 times, you can open your eyes when you're ready. Have any questions on the meditation at all? So, what are we going to discuss this evening? Has anyone got a topic at all that they want to lady at the back?
You were speaking earlier about like how emotions and our thoughts and nature is changeable, and how there's nothing ever really in stasis for very long. Do you think you could speak more on that?
Yeah, so with the that particular principle, that say the changeability of experience, the changeability of phenomena in the natural world throughout the universe, it's something that, you know, that process of change that you can see, you know, virtually in every conditioned thing, you know, within the mind, the body, you know, right through the universe, and even all the natural sciences that we see, chemistry, biology, physics, that process of change is essentially imbued in every single expression of nature, absolutely everything in the human body, even like the mind. You know, the mind never ever stays the same, even from second to second. So, you know, you're looking at this with a process of change, like this whole conditioning of phenomena. So nothing ever stands apart by itself. So our thoughts and our feelings don't stand alone. They're conditioned and affected by different things from the past, from the people that we associate with, the things our past come with, and, you know, different challenges and events. So, you know, that whole impact of how whole experience, it shapes the nature of our especially like the mind experience. So you've got this kind of for example, you could have a particular feeling, and you know, you could meet a particular person, and they bring up a certain feeling, in oneself. But it's not just that person alone. There could be like at least 3 or 4 factors which are involved, which bring up that particular mind state. So the whole process is quite complicated. And until people have very, very deep, really, really deep meditation, they can't see exactly all those processes which are going on. Because when you look at, say, for example, with it could be something like this, a computer program which runs an application or a program on say Windows or or apple, that, you know, you're looking at this multifaceted, like I said, like agenda or code conditioning, which gives rise to a certain kind of phenomena. So you could look at, you know, in a nutshell, you could have a number of factors which give rise to one state of mind, or one kind of attitude, one kind of perception, state of consciousness. So for example, with the meditation practice, the reason why I put emphasis on that changeability principle is because absolutely everything connects with that. So that simile of, say, like a large tree, where when you look at the Buddhist teaching, the trunk of the tree is changeability, is emptiness, and unsatisfactory in the sense that it can't bring you absolute full happiness, you know, in every single way. When you're looking at, say, personal phenomena, you know, an example would be absolutely no person can ultimately make you happy. No drug, no amount of traveling, you know, knowledge, personal experience, research can bring you to an ultimate state of human, say, potential, happiness, realization, peace of mind. So when you use that changeability principle with the meditation, from the trunk, from that main core, that central core, you get all these other, it helps to basically instigate other insights which are connected with that changeability principle. So when you just keep focusing again and again and again, hundreds and thousands of times, on that principle, that increases your potential for insights into other areas, because that anicca principle goes just right through the universe itself. So you can just use this as a tool. You can through reflection, you can increase one's awareness and understanding of certain things, but when you focus right there on that changeability principle, it increases your awareness of things in other areas as well, because it's all connected with that. It's all connected with that process of that change that, you know, that no one can deny. So did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
No worries. Did anyone else have a challenging principle they'd like to? Don't be shy. The tougher the questions, the better. The monks and nuns, we really like this kind of thing. This person. Yes, the gentleman at the back.
If I'm doing something wrong, because I can still hear things, I can still understand my surroundings, I'm aware of what's going on, but I go into this really relaxing place, so sort of a, but it's not, I don't focus on something, it leaves me there, and sometimes it's ridiculous, it's like, you know, just strange things, but really good, don't get me wrong. I mean, just sometimes it's quite crazy. I mean, sometimes it can be something as crazy as, like, people I know, or things I love, or food, or anything. It can be just, I drift into this place for minutes. I'm not sure whether I'm meant to be going there. Am I meant to be focusing on something a bit more tangible, or something a bit different? I'm not sure.
What I would do is, so for example, if I had that state of mind, initially I'd bring my attention back to the breath, but that you only do that initially, because if you get certain thoughts, feelings and attachments to anything, to people, to past events or whatnot, that I always put emphasis on this reflection to understand thoughts and feelings and states of mind, because if we don't have any understanding whatsoever what we're going through, You can't really let these things go over time. There's a reason why your attention actually went there, to those people, to certain foods, past experiences. There's an underlying reason, and you need to investigate and look at all the reasons why. Even if you just stop for a full 30 seconds, if easily 30 seconds, 45 seconds, once you start to go into that and comprehend it and unravel it, you tend to release your grip, because this kind of phenomena, it just keeps coming back again and again and again, 100 times, 1,000 times, because we don't really understand exactly what's happening there. So you get more sharp and more skillful over time. That, so for example, if I've got, it could be something with my father. So for example, I've got some problem with my father from childhood, and it keeps coming up again and again and again and again every single day when I meditate. And the reason it does is because I don't fully understand the connection with my parents. There could be underlying stuff, underlying feelings, unresolved business. And if I don't look at it, and if I don't comprehend exactly what's happening, it's not going to go away. It'll just keep coming back again, because it's telling you, you know, you're not addressing me, you're not talking to me, we don't understand what's happening there. And that's why I always push this thing with insight. You know, it's all very nice to develop the peaceful meditation, calm and focus and that, but you've got to develop your wisdom faculty, because this stuff, it will not stop. It can stay with you for 20 years or more. You know, at the highest level of the practice, the wisdom faculty is at the pinnacle, the highest level of this practice, and you never ever let that slide. You've always got to develop that and sharpen that, because all our attachments, all the stuff we go through, all the stuff that happened to us 10, 15 years ago, that we still got maybe a bee in our bonnet, or we just can't stop thinking about that person, or that when that, you know, that car accident, or this or that. You know, as without repeating myself too much, you've got to understand exactly what's happening there completely. Otherwise, this stuff will just keep spinning round and round and round.
I don't understand exactly what you're saying, but I'm not sure how I release it, like how I get rid of it.
Try to understand it on your emotions and feelings are the energy which drive your thought processes, your ideas, your personal experience. If you were emotionally very, very cool, you could get your mind still in a very, very short space of time. But with our emotional makeup, it's the driving force, the energy which drives concepts, ideas, thoughts, you know, experiences, keeps you thinking, you know, keeps stimulating other feelings as well. All the stuff, it's all interconnected. I'll just wait. So, lost my train of thought. I've lost my train of thought. You go right into this material, try to understand it, to comprehend exactly what's happening there. And what was that last point you said? Last point?
I've been got onto this in the last
say 4 or 5 weeks, and it works very, very well, but you just need to be a little bit careful with it. If you want to use the soft and fluffy meditation, like the changeability principle, you can get a degree of tranquility. You're just watching the breathing will get you reasonably peaceful, reasonably. You start using that changeability principle, it can be on people. So for example, if I'm attached to it could be wildlife, could be bushwalking, caving. So for example, I'm really attached to this stuff. Well, I can use that principle, these activities are changeable in nature, like caving is changeable, or hiking, or it could be any things, like I could be attached to flowers or gardening. This process, this experience is changeable in nature. So I can't constantly keep grasping and holding onto it, because it's in a state of flux all the time. It never stays the same from one minute to the next. So why do I keep holding on to this stuff, grasping and clinging and holding on to this as myself, as my personal experience, when it's constantly changing? This is what happens with this changeability principle, why you get tranquility when you use this kind of approach with the breath, changeability of phenomena. it forces you to, in a gentle way, to keep letting go. It helps you to develop insight that you can't cling to nothing till the day you die, because it's completely out of your control. On a molecular level, on an emotional level, the stuff is constantly in flux, and you can't get a grip on it if you tried. It's just not possible. But if you really want to get peaceful, this is what I do now, and it's very I'm comfortable with it, but it's very forceful, so you need to be a bit careful with it. Things like I used to get like the earth element contemplation. You can do it in a more gentle way. You can do things like, could be things like biological things, flowers, trees, herbs. Could be any kind of thing in nature is earth element. For example, you're a person who's into what do they call people who are into stone structures, geology. It could be a certain kind of stone or even clay. It might sound ridiculous, but this kind of stuff works. A certain kind of stone, like it could be mica, could be granite. This is something that you can connect with. You've got a tangible feel for this, the subject. You could be an expert. You could be a person with a PhD in this area. So it means something to you. It's important. So particular stones or granite, anything is earth element. Like big spaces between the word is earth or is earth element. So as you're breathing out, say granite, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out is earth, breathing in, breathing out element. Granite is earth element. You just do it in a very comfortable way. That will get you tranquility faster than virtually anything else. But you just need to be a bit careful, because it's really quite forceful. And if you get any kind of reaction, then you switch to the Anicca principle, the soft and fluffy practice. So for anyone who struggles to get peaceful, you can use this very forceful meditation. But as long as you feel comfortable, you just keep doing it. If you get any negativity, then you stop right there and you go to the soft and fluffy changeability principle of any kind of phenomena. But I've done a lot of experimentation with meditation over the years, and that's what I do now, and that works. It's really, really effective. But you just need to be just a little bit careful with it, because the suppression effect, it forces you to let go very, very quickly. But sometimes you can get like a reaction. But you just test it, you experiment with it, and as long as you're comfortable with it, you just keep it going. And if you get a reaction, you get really like strong irritation, anger, then you use the soft and fluffy changeability principle. Bob?
You mentioned soft and fluffy a few times. Do you like meta meditation?
Why I don't?
Yeah, why don't you do meta?
Well, for what? I don't need it. I don't have problems. If I didn't like people, if I wasn't interested in their stuff or helping or supporting them, or had any kind of real aversion, anger, irritation, I would do that. But I don't have that problem. If people like to do metta, if they really like to do metta and they're comfortable with it, it's all well and good. But for me, I don't like to be overly soft and overly sensitive. It's for me, it doesn't work, because when I'm at the top of the line, I have to deal with stuff and problems and difficulties, and I need a degree of firmness of mine. I'm dealing with young monks, and some of these guys, sometimes you've got to get, you're in people's faces and all this kind of stuff when things, when there's ups and downs of things get a bit intense. So, I'm all for being kind, compassionate, but I like a little bit of psychological firmness there. I don't want to be soft like a little cotton ball, where if things start to get a bit hard or difficult, and then you're just so sensitive, you start to get shaken up. I don't go that way unless I have like real aversion, negativity, which I don't get. Not very often at all. These days. But it is a very, very useful practice, and it's very good for samadhi, positivity, like positive feelings towards oneself and other people. To give you an idea, young doctor, this is going back a while, about 18 months ago, had a real pressure on him with his medical profession, you know, financial stuff, all the rest of it. Very difficult situation. And it was that bad, he was basically close to suicide. So, and that was the first thing I said. I said, do sustained loving kindness meditate, go straight up to the hall, straight after we have after we talk, and then do sustained loving kindness meditation for yourself for at least 5 minutes, 10 minutes straight, and then look very carefully. You know, the guy's smart, he's a young doctor. Look very carefully at the state, your emotional state of mind. And I said, if you see the slightest change, then you know it's working, and do that every single day, at least 5 minutes every single day. And so I get the impression he definitely got something out of it, because I never heard from him again. So hopefully he's okay. Sorry?
What?
No, I don't know. I hope not.
That's why you didn't hear.
I don't even want to think about it.
That's a possibility.
You're a tough person.
It's a possibility.
But it is. But I won't admit it.
You sure?
No, I won't. but seriously, if when things get really, really tough, loving kindness, compassion, that is the best way to go, because these meditations are very, very powerful. It's very simple, but the strength of the feelings that you can generate are really strong. You can spot when people who do loving kindness, you can spot them, you know, very, very, very quickly. They're just full of love and positivity. Yep, please.
That point you raised there was changeable.
Mm.
And that's probably quite a good way of getting rid of reoccurring thoughts. Music, I've just had a big session with James Blunt. You couldn't get rid of
it. Yeah.
Just repeating the sequence. Sometimes it's Pink Floyd.
You're a real buff. But all right. So if I was in your shoes, how would I deal with it? I was home with mum and dad. They had the radio, the television, and the computer running all day and till the early evening, say 8:30 or 9 p.m. When I was home, I had no problems getting peaceful at all. When I came back to the monastery, that stuff was spinning for at least several days. I was using the earth element, and it took a little while. It took several days, but then my mind went quite still, and it's been okay. But yeah, your music is very, very difficult. So use the firmest. You can experiment with different techniques, but something I would tend to do initially. This is an approach, is just focus on if the music is really just over the top, it just won't stop. Use the music as a meditation object initially, and then just focus right on the sound, or even the pictures, and just sharpen the mindfulness. Just focus like a laser beam on that stuff, and then maybe for a minute or two, and then start investigating why am I attached to this stuff? Why do I keep thinking about it, proliferating about it? You know, what does it mean to me emotionally? You know, why do I keep repeating these memories? And just go right into it. Just keep looking at it and as a meditation object, and then investigating it. Because you want to weaken the bonds, weaken the attachment. Because if I don't understand, if I've got this stuff spinning and I've got no idea why I keep thinking about it over and over and again for days or a week, 7 days on end, you know, it's not going to stop. So, you know, if I just can't get peaceful within whatever, I mean, most after 30 minutes, if people can't get peaceful, they've got to use the heavy duty practices, and then just experiment with that, and watch the way the mind reacts. And if you can't see results, if you can't see any change in the state of the mind within even 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then use the earth element. And if you really want to use, if you really want to get use some force with this, I don't get any bad reactions with this at all. No negativity with this at all. But people are quite different. You get a visual image of the skeleton from anatomy book from the internet, and then use that mantra: skeleton is earth, or skeleton is earth element, and then use that as a mantra. And you can use that if you want to, if once every minute of the day for 16, 18 hours a day, all your waking hours, to get some real oomph, some real energy and some force behind it. When you meditate normally, you can use that mantra, and I can guarantee you it will quieten you down. But you may have to switch between that earth element and the breathing, or just the mantra alone. And you may have to do the mantra for 5 minutes, but you'll definitely get some result, 5-10 minutes. But if the mind is still clinging to the music, the soundtracks, then start investigating. So switch between the mantra and investigation of the musical state, and then back and forth. Maybe could be every several minutes, 5 minutes. But the bottom line is you're using a number of meditation tools. But you need to see exactly what works for you and what gets the best results over time. But another little trick is with this kind of stuff is you can replace it. You can get, say for example, either the Theravadin or the Pure Land chanting mantras that you can get on the internet. And some of them are really, really they're quite catchy. They've got a very, very nice resonance to them. And just play, just have that playing. You know, put your whatever on your CD or on your iPod, and just listen to it and just have it playing 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, and keep easily probably 10, 20, 10, 15 minutes, and it won't stop. That Buddhist mantra, whatever it is, Tibetan, Mahayana, Theravadin. And it will keep going. You will change your attention from
channeling.
Yep. You'll switch from Pink Floyd to this Buddhist mantra. And that Buddhist mantra, once you get it going, it won't stop, and it will just go all day, and it can go for days and days on end. But that will get your mind peaceful. It's easier for you to go from the Buddhist mantra to peacefulness than to go from Pink Floyd to peacefulness. And but it's just that, yeah, but just experiment and see what actually works for you.
But that is the question: why listen for so long to Pink Floyd or whoever it is? Maybe listen for 5 minutes and that's enough.
But they don't want to.
Why?
Because they like it.
So you like many things.
You like Italian Gregorian chanting, don't you?
Yeah. No, but I don't listen to it all the time. One is enough.
What? For how long? How long?
Oh, 5 minutes. One track. Good enough, because, you know, life is varied and things are different and things happen, and why am I going
to
sit?
You're a busy person. You haven't got time to sit around for 1 or 2 hours.
I do sit around. But my mind is not hooked on what I am sitting on.
Mm.
It's going everywhere.
But people find it easier. That can be quite an easy technique to work with. But the thing is, some people just love their music, their classics, and this
conditioning.
Yeah, well, they're attached to the stuff, you know.
Yeah.
It's not for me to tell people they can't listen to music.
Lifestyle of conditioning.
Could it be...
Some people love ballads. They love the Beach Boys, you know.
Could it be a reminder of bitter times?
Sorry?
Other times, like reminder of youth, reminder of relationships, reminders of home. Attachment.
Yeah. I mean, like any kind of music, there could be half a dozen things which are quite important to you. You just imagine, for example, you picked up on a certain style of music. I mean, my father's really addicted to Beach Boys, but even like Freddie Mercury, he seems to really like Freddie Mercury for some reason.
Yeah.
So he works out. He's 80 years of age. He pushes heavy weight with Freddie Mercury.
Yeah. He's good. good. He's good.
Yeah, pretty much style.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry he died.
Yeah, everybody's. Yeah.
Well, is there anything wrong being a... Yeah, I know some don't like, but is there anything wrong with a good feeling for music and it lifts your spirits? Is there anything wrong with that?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, you can whatever style of music appeals to you, but it's only for mainstream people, it's not really a problem at all. But the meditators might find it difficult when they go to practice, to sit, and I mean, and the monks know this as well. They keep right away from this, you know, from music, you know, like things like dramas, action movies. It's bad news for monks and nuns who meditate. It won't stop. I mean, I don't even like this kind of stuff. But the way it affects you, the stuff won't stop and it just keeps spinning. Yeah. You can watch that stuff. I could watch an action movie for 5 minutes and that could just basically destroy my day.
Please,
it just won't stop. It could take me like hours to get over 5 minutes of this kind of nonsense. You know? Lady?
Why don't you use
You can, but and essentially whatever, depending on your disposition, your past karma, maybe past parami, past life, you know, certain things will work very, very well for you, but you'll only know that when you experiment and you swap and change between different practices. But if you see your mind respond and you can see the mind getting peaceful, you can see the mind change, become tranquil, more stable, you know there's something in that, and you need to develop that practice, and maybe eventually over 5 years or 10 years, you may have like a little toolbox of 3-4 meditations or more, maybe even 5, which work very, very well for you, and you know exactly what you need to do with those 3 or 4 practices, and you swap and change and you make slight adjustments with those practices, which give you very good results, you know, especially over 30 minutes an hour. But when you're on, say, 7 or 9 day meditation retreat, then you're really going to be, you know, quite sharp and quite skillful with the time that you've got. You know, there's not many, you know, not everyone gets on a 7 or 9 day retreat like every year, because they're, you know, very busy working for a living or whatnot, or they've got kids and stuff. So you know, you've got the opportunity to experiment and to see what you can actually do. I know monks who, for example, when they, because they've got this kind of a resonance with, say, the light blue casino, it's like a coloured disc that some forest monks use, and as soon as they went to that practice, the mind responded very, very quickly, and they got quite good samadhi. And easily, like if you did a practice, I mean, within seven days, I can see very, very clearly if a practice is good for me or not. But this particular teacher said, for example, even with lay practitioners, easily 30 days, you know, if a practice is working very, very well for you, and if it's not, then you try something else which has got a bit more oomph to it. So within, you know, you can feel it within, I'd say 7 days easily, you should see if the mind actually responds, if the mind's actually calming down, if the attachments are starting to loosen. But you know, there's so many meditation objects, but you'll definitely find a handful, and you'll get very, very good results. And I always put emphasis on sort of being skillful, getting results, because you know, when you're looking at the course of your life experience, now with Dharma practice, you know, most people are practicing absolute minimum 10, 20, 30 years, you know, so you don't want to waste like too much time just playing around, just trying to do breath meditation and just doing that for 20 years, 10, 20 years, and you feel that the quality of the meditation is still not satisfactory. I wouldn't go that way. Within the first 12 months, try to get a really solid feel For you know, like said, like a degree of skill with the meditation practice. Did anyone else have any questions at all?
What about visualization?
You certainly can, and if you have like certain things, like I've done this previously, like to give, in a nutshell, what I did was I visualized myself. being on a beach, say for example, say like in Asia, on a beach with palm trees, white sand, and sparkling waves like rolling in. So you're on your banana chair with your orange juice.
Yeah.
And seriously, you can visualize yourself there. And after say maybe a minute or two, and then you visualize yourself getting up and then walking back from the beach, and you can hear the squeaking sand, and you can feel the warmth from the beach sand as you're walking across, and then as you move back from the beach, then you move into the forest. So you just visualize the ferns and the trees, and you can look up into the canopy, and you can see the sun streaming down, the sunlight streaming down, through the and sort of say sparkling above you. And so, and you can even visualize like even things like small monkeys or say creatures in the forest, butterflies, insects, as you're moving through the forest section, and then you can visualize actually reaching say the center of a forest clearing where there's a temple, maybe it could be like either made of stone or wood. And you can design like your own. You can visualize your own temple, but like beautifully done, with the architecture. Even things like colored glass, with a stone staircase. And you can visualize yourself approaching this meditation, this shrine room and meditation hall. And then you can move. You can imagine walking up, opening the door, and entering the building. And visualize the internal structure, the walls, the framework. The light streaming in through the coloured glass, and you can visualise your own shrine with the Buddha Rupa, the colour of the Buddha Rupa, the woodwork, decorations, and maybe there's a meditation cushion, and then you visualise yourself approaching, maybe even polished wood, on the floor, approaching your meditation cushion and actually sitting down or paying respects to the Buddha, sitting down, and then actually going into maybe say a quarter or half lotus, and then you can finish the meditation if you wish at that point, and then you can just imagine you're sitting there in front of the Buddha Rupa for whatever, say it could be 30 seconds, 60 seconds, and then you get yourself up, you bow to the Buddha, and then you leave the building, moving back through the forest, back to the beach line, and then back to the ocean, the ocean front. And if you've got good visualization, you could easily spend maybe 10, 20 minutes doing that. But for some people, it may be quite tangible to you, but it does take quite a bit of like mental energy to hold those images. But if you really like that kind of thing and it works well for you, I would definitely sort of get into that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But there's all sorts of things. So whatever appeals to you, like a natural experience or setting, you can use the power of your mind to move in that direction to get that kind of sharp mindfulness and focus.
Yeah, I only stick with one visualization. I don't change it. Like by the time, like you say, I go from the beach to the temple, I already got, like I already in meditation, I already not aware of what's around or whatever, I'm in meditation, and I don't change it. And then as it happens, I meet people on the way. Yeah, I do, and meeting them has a reason, and I question who are they and what's the message, is there a message for me or something, but I don't change it. It's the one that works. Yeah,
it's good.
Because changing it would change the mind as well.
State of mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is the lady at the back here.
I thought that meditation was to free your mind and be restful and sort of get into this sort of calm state. And I'm hearing the visualization, which would make my mind busy, and trying to work out problems, which would sort of, you know, go away from meditation and be sort of worrying, why is this happening? Why is it coming up all the time? So it's getting away to what I thought meditation was about.
Yeah, so, you know, because people are very, very different in their nature, so if you find that the silent meditation works for you, mm-hmm. that's the way you should go.
Mm-hmm.
But some people, it's what resonates with you, and whatever your preference, what actually appeals to you and gets, say, like a good result with the practice, that's exactly the way you should go, because every single person in this room will have a slightly different... like a different start, slant with their mm-hmm. their approach with the practice. Bob?
Last one.
Yeah, yeah.
Buddha put together 40 different meditations. Yeah, 40.
Yeah, but in reality, there's like thousands, thousands.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing, just little things like, you know, like loving kindness meditation, you can do that. You know, there's so many words in one's vocabulary, you could easily do that 1,000 different ways. I reckon you could. You know, you whip out a dictionary, there's all sorts of nice, you know, sort of beautiful, flowery words you can use. Things like the colour casinos, you can imagine any colour you can imagine within the spectrum. If you love a certain shade of crimson, you could use that as a meditation object with the colour disc. Compassion, you know, positive, sort of like kind of positive. Based mantras, you can do them 1,000 different ways.
Mm.
It's like variation on a theme.
Yes.
Do you want to take charge, Doug?
Yep.
No trouble.
Thank you.
Thank you kindly.